This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Is a single-payer system the best idea for healthcare in the United States? More Democratic candidates for Congress and state offices are embracing the idea. The film Fix It, Healthcare at Its Tipping Point, will be shown on Thursday night, September 27th, at 7 o'clock in the Kalamazoo Public Library's Van Dusen Room. Eli Rubin is a Western Michigan University history professor. He's also president of Michigan for Single-Payer Healthcare. Bill Farmer is a member of the board of Michigan for Single-Payer Healthcare, as well as a member of the Southwest Michigan chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America. Those two organizations are sponsoring the event at the library. Thank you both for being here.
Well, thank you, Gordon.
Thank you.
Make the case here, if you could, your elevator speech to somebody. I'll start with you, Eli Rubin. Why is a single-payer healthcare system the way to go for the United States?
Yeah, Gordon, thanks for the question. We have a system that is broken now, and there have been a lot of attempts to try to fix it, but the only thing that makes sense at this point is a single-payer Medicare for All universal healthcare system. We have a tremendous amount of people who either don't have insurance still, or they are in situations where they have insurance, but the insurance doesn't cover things, costs a tremendous amount. And we have 60% of the bankruptcies in this country are due to medical bills, probably more than that. And these are things that are unknown in other countries. In almost every single industrialized other country, there are different types of systems, but they all have universal health care. People simply don't have catastrophic bills. They don't have bankruptcies due to medical bills. They don't die because of lack of coverage. We also spend more than twice as much per capita as any other country on healthcare, and have a ranking that's somewhere around 45th in the world. So our system is incredibly inefficient, and simply put, it shouldn't matter whether or not you're rich or not, whether you live or die.
Bill, same thing. If somebody says to you, I'm not crazy about a single-payer system, how do you try to talk them into seeing your side of the argument?
Well, Eli has brought up some major points that reinforce our belief that single-payer is the way to go. Of the more than 60% that Eli referenced, defaults, the bankruptcies claimed, 47% of those people have health insurance coverage. So even though you have health insurance coverage, there are many bills that are not covered by our current health care system. Also, our system is basically in private hands of insurance companies. What single payer does, it eliminates the profit motive out of delivering health care coverage to the country. By eliminating the profit motive, you eliminate what has been garnered anywhere between $400 and $500 billion a year of profit and overhead that doesn't go into health care provision. It goes to the profits of the private insurance companies. And that amount of money goes far in paying for a healthcare system where there are no deductibles, no co-pays, no co-insurance, and providing coverage for everybody in the country.
I think many people would agree with what you said at the beginning, that our current healthcare system is not working. The question might be, though, is a single-payer system, which isn't necessarily used in every other industrialized country, there are various forms, does a single-payer system work for a country as big as the United States, 325 million people, lots of differences by geography and where people live and demographics and those sort of things? Does a single-payer system fit for a country like the United States as opposed to something else?
Well, there are countries that are, quite large and span large different geographies that have it. And I would say that, we already have single-payer systems in this country. Medicare is a single-payer system. The VA is a single-payer system. All that means is that the government reimburses doctors for their services, and the Medicare is good whether you're in the tip of, you know, Nome, Alaska, or whether you're in southern Florida. And it's an incredibly popular program. And we don't seem to have those problems with those programs. So I don't see any reason why simply extending Medicare, expanding and improving it to cover, as is proposed, to cover dental, vision, and no copays to everybody would somehow change that fact.
I'd have to agree with Eli 100%. All we need to do is look at existent structures within the federal government. Primary is our military. There's military facilities in almost every state in the country, including international places. And they are well-funded, and it's probably the most subsidized part of our economy, and by all indications, is very effective. Social Security is another example that we can look at that functions very high in delivering a service by the government as a collection of taxes, and that's a benefit that everybody takes advantage of and is available. We would be building on those kinds of structures and experience, and not only with our experience, but you know, business and the United States is big in finding the best solutions. There is no doubt that we can do that with our health care delivery system.
Vermont tried a single-payer system, or was going to at the state level, decided that they weren't going to go through with it because they thought it would be too large of a tax increase to pay for it. Why would that be different at the national level?
Well, I think that to some degree, it was simply a failure of political will in Vermont. You know, it was the governor who decided that the tax increase would be too large, and he didn't have to decide that. I think that you're seeing, number one, that that happened. So a couple of reasons why I think that that happened. It happened in 2013, and it was a very different climate than it is now. We've seen opinion polls change drastically just in the last 18 months, in part because of Bernie Sanders' candidacy, in part because of the work of organizations like the DSA, and to some smaller degree, our organization, Michigan for Single Payer. Advocating and going out there, we've seen opinion polling climb from something like, you know, 50% of Americans in favor of this to now 70%, and even 52% of Republicans in favor of it. The reality is that under Medicare for All, 95% of people will save money in the long run. I pay, you know, over $10,000 a year in premiums for my family plan, and my employer kicks in another $12,000 or $13,000. If my taxes were to go up by $5,000, which is the general estimate now, you know, it's an estimate, but that's the general estimate, and that $10,000 were to go away out of my pocket and $13,000 to go away out of my employer's pocket, and I were to get the same coverage, I mean, once you tell people that, the light goes on. There are very few people who will listen to that and say, no, I'd still rather pay the $10,000 and have my employer fork over another $13,000, which are costs that get passed along. So, I mean, I think that the political situation is different. The healthcare situation is different. That was still in the early days of Obamacare when people were hoping that it would work as promised, and it hasn't. So those are some of the reasons I think it can work now.
What would be the details of a single-payer system? I mean, we could spend a lot of time talking about it, but let me just throw out one example of a question I think people might have. Who decides what exactly does get covered under a single-payer system? Is that some sort of federal bureaucracy? Is there some sort of a commission somewhere that makes those final calls?
The decision would not involve health insurance carriers or executives from insurance carriers. The decision on health care under a single-payer system would be determined by your practitioner, your doctor, and the patient. That's where the decision for what services needs to be done, what tests, that's the place that decisions are made. All too often currently, those decisions aren't made by the doctors and their patients. It's made by a health insurance executive.
And again, it wouldn't be any different than Medicare is now, although the bills that are in Congress would be expanded and improved Medicare. So it's specifically written into the law that it would cover dental and vision. And, you know, 93% of Americans are happy with Medicare more than that, 95%, 93% of doctors take Medicare. Part of the reason is, as Bill said, it's one thing when the government is in charge of deciding what things are available. It means it's democratically accountable. It means that if you don't like what Medicare is providing, you can run for office, you can vote for a candidate who will promise to pass laws to make Medicare include massage therapists if for some reason it doesn't, right? That's democratically accountable. Right now, and every one of us has a story like this, like Bill was saying, you have a friend who's got cancer. He needs I had a good friend from college who had cancer. He needed a treatment that was still experimental. And the insurance company said no. There was nowhere to go. There was no one to talk to. There was no person you could. There was no election. There's nothing you can do. You're completely at the mercy. And they say no because they know that there's a good chance. There was a good chance he was going to die. And that was how they save money and make profits, is by withholding that treatment.
The film Fix It features a lot of people who run businesses, also features their employees. Is there a business-friendly case to be made for a single-payer system, and also maybe a case to be made in terms of a benefit to employees of separating their health insurance from their workplace, even if right now they're fairly happy with the insurance they get at work?
Let's start with the bottom line here, and that is the burden of the financial costs of healthcare currently. I'm a retired staff representative for a public employee union, American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. In every set of negotiations, the biggest problem was negotiating health care, where employees would pay anywhere between $4,000 and $6,000 out of their own pockets, and the employer would pay as much as $13,000 to $15,000 out of their pockets and their budgets. There is no greater need to relinquish the pressure that employers, both in the public sector and private sector, have in paying for their employees' health insurance. That is the biggest motivation. And the documentary Fix It, American Healthcare at the Tipping Point, is from a business perspective, and it points out the inefficiencies. All that he wanted to do, the owner of this business, is provide affordable health care to his employees. And the only way they could do that over much research is to go politically into a political fight for single payer.
Yeah. I mean, the business case is enormous. You know, the people don't, especially, you know, smaller businesses, like the guy who made this movie owns a picture frame company. He got into that business to make picture frames and to make money, not to get into the healthcare and health insurance business, which is essentially what he spends a huge amount of his time doing. And anybody who works for a small, medium, or even a large-sized company can attest to that. They spend tremendous amounts of time, tremendous amounts of money dealing with health insurance, even though what they want to be doing is fixing cars or teaching art or doing whatever it is that their hearts desire. And for an employee's point of view, Bill is right. I mean, we see this with unionized employees. You know, even if they get a fairly good plan through their union, you know, it's the fear of rising healthcare costs at the negotiating table that holds back other things. If unions didn't have to negotiate for healthcare and could focus on wages or focus on, things like pensions, they'd have way more leverage. And to be honest with you, you know, we know that from various studies that anywhere from 12 to 20% of people would leave their jobs, are in the jobs that they're in right now, solely because of the benefits. They're not happy where they work. They wanted to do something else with their life. They wanted to get start a fishing boat business or something, anything else that what they always dreamed of doing, but they have a pre-existing condition or they've got kids. They cannot afford to leave that big company that they hate working for because they can't afford to go without benefits, not even for a month.
So you're saying there's an entrepreneurial case to be made. If you're freed from the tie of health insurance to your job, then maybe there's an opportunity for you to start your own business venture.
Gordon, we know that we see entrepreneurial activity have a sharp uptick after the age of 65 in this country. A lot of people start businesses, the things they wanted to do their whole life long. Why? Because they're on Medicare. They can afford to retire from the job they, you know, had to have, and then they start that art studio or whatever it was they always wanted to do. We know this is true.
Would a single-payer system do anything about rising healthcare costs? Because if healthcare costs continue to go up, then doesn't that bill end up on the taxpayer's doorstep? If healthcare costs are still going up at the same time that you have a single-payer system, in other words, the taxpayers are now paying for that in addition to everything else.
Well, listen, I mean, we know that, when the Medicare is not allowed to currently is not allowed to negotiate pharma prices, drug prices, which is absurd. In improved expanded Medicare for all, that would be part of the deal, right? That would be a very important part of it. They would be allowed to negotiate. And as anybody with a basic economics, you know, degree or knowledge of economics knows, negotiating is all about the pool of, you know, of customers. And one of the reasons that healthcare prices are so expensive is that with this patchwork system of thousands of smaller companies, they all have much less leverage to negotiate down prices. If you had one system with 320, 330 million customers, you're negotiating the price of drugs for 330 million people, the price of MRIs for 330 million people, you can get those prices down, which is why in Canada, an MRI or a drug costs, you know, oftentimes a tenth or sometimes a hundredth of what it costs in this country, because they can negotiate for their entire country at once.
I'm sure you have both heard from people who say there's this horror story from a country where they had single payer. Somebody who needed treatment ended up sitting there waiting and waiting, couldn't get in to see a doctor. What's the answer to that? I mean, is that a valid concern? And is there a way to make sure that it doesn't happen if single payer becomes a reality in the United States?
Well, I think there are horror stories in every healthcare delivery system. All that can be easily documented, I'm sure. But those pale in comparison to the millions in this country that don't even have access to health care, number one. And those who do have access and experience a health care crisis go bankrupt. You should not have to have, your health insurance should not be based on how much money you have in the bank. It should be a human right. And it should be accessible to everybody.
Yeah. And again, those stories are, you know, cherry picked by opponents of single payer, oftentimes funded by the health insurance lobby, and magnified so that it makes it sound like everybody in Canada or everybody in England or everybody in, you know, Sweden is being denied care. There isn't a single instance of a country that's adopted Medicare for all or similar universal healthcare system that has decided this isn't working, people are suffering, let's go back to just only having private health insurance. The reality is the closer you get to true single payer, which is like Britain and Canada and Taiwan and Korea, those are the countries with true single payer. You see more and higher satisfaction and higher health outcomes. The country with the number one best health outcomes is England, and with the highest satisfaction with their healthcare system, it's England. You know, France is like, you know, second or third. So if this were some major problem, these countries would have gotten rid of this system by now.
I believe the film Fix It says France is one and Australia is two.
Ah, things might be different than the statistics I saw, but I'll go with the film then. Thank you.
Eli Rubin and Bill Farmer, thank you both for your time.
Thank you, Gordon.
The film Fix It, Healthcare at the Tipping Point will be shown at the Kalamazoo Public Library Thursday night, September 27th at 7 o'clock in the Kalamazoo Public Library's Van Dusen Room. The event is sponsored by Southwest Michigan Democratic Socialists of America and Michigan for Single-Payer Healthcare. You can find links with more information at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.